I have discovered, being at McGill now for 2 years, that I'm not the only person who has difficulties getting people's attention. It seems to be a universal phenomenon, and this howdy thing, I think, works better than anything else. So I just want to start out by saying to people near and far that it's clear that I'm winning the bet. By 1:30 p.m. tomorrow, when there's snow still on the ground, people get to gloat at Diane, and Sun Trade will be $40 a head. Okay. She has 23 hours. She's going to lose like a dog. Anyway, I've been here for almost 2 years. On a more serious side, I've been here for almost 2 years, and I can just tell you that I really adore being here. I love Montreal. This university is a great university, and it's a great library, and all of you are wonderful people to work with. And it truly is, it has been and it continues to be a true pleasure for me to have the privilege of leading this organization. We have many things ahead of us that are huge, and I know the one that I think most people know, that the thing that's on my mind the most is buildings. It's just facilities. I am hugely aware that we are filled up to the gills, that we have students on lots of times on every seat in our library buildings. We've got them on the floor. We've got them getting into fights in law. We've got, literally, the one thing that we certainly have enough of here are students and books. We are, most of you, in some way or another, are involved in either helping out the collection stewardship group or are working with that group to provide input into our being able to truly assess what our collections mean, what our collections are, how we compare to our sibling libraries within Quebec and our cousin libraries within Canada, and our first cousins in the rest of North America. We're doing very intense analyses to identify those things that for us become part of North America's, but really humankind's, collective collection. Though it's not an easy thing to do, I know that people are struggling with trying to figure out, well, what do you mean by legacy? What I'm going to have to make really hard decisions, and I'm going to, you know, each one of us, those of you who are responsible for making these decisions, what does it mean with the LPs in music? What does it mean with the consumer health collection in medicine? You know, what does it mean? Are these legacy collections or are they not? These aren't easy decisions, and I just want all of you to know that I sympathize with that, but that's why the man is paying us. In a very literal sense, it's up to us now. We're in these positions, and we're the ones charged with making sure that we make the right decisions. And they can't be totally conservative decisions in the sense of we're not going to take any risks and we're going to keep everything, because that's not a choice. We've had a fascinating report from the, I'm not sure what it is, subgroup, whatever, Anne-Marie's group, on storage and what best practices are within the profession in terms of storage, and some fascinating data on just what it costs to keep a book on a shelf in an OpenStack library versus what it costs to keep one at the other end of a spectrum in storage, in some sort of high-density storage, whether that be above ground and on the Harvard model, just big cubes, rectangular solids, or whether it be the the robotic solution. We, you know, one of the things that I truly have noticed about McGill is that somehow we managed to make a dollar stretch to a dollar and a half or $2. I thought that we were pretty conservative in Texas and poor, but I'm here to tell you we weren't. At least not compared to this. There's no university that's got money to burn right now, but we have even more issues. And so we have to be really careful about how we spend the public's trust. And I know I keep saying this, but I just want to say again how important these decisions are, how much I appreciate the hard work that people, of the people involved, particularly in this group right now, the collection stewardship group, how Lori has come on just in time to get deeply immersed in this stuff, up to her gills. She's learning as she's practicing. But, you know, don't avoid her when you see her coming. Take her calls. I just want to say thank you, but again, to reinforce just how important these things are. Just met with the facilities people just this morning, and it is now time for us to be able to give them real answers and really information on what different scenarios would be. So it really, we will have to decide what it would mean for us to keep X percentage of our collection here on site in these buildings, what it would mean if we stored more off-site, what off-site means, close, far, underground, above ground. I mean, all of these things are huge decisions that we're going to have to make here somewhat in the near future, and offer alternatives so that the decision makers in the James building and others can decide what to do. So that in a nutshell is what's most on my mind. We have had, though, a number of wonderful celebratory events just in this past week. We've had two openings of exhibits, one on the first floor here, one up in Special Collections on medieval things, medieval something. There's a noun to that, but I've forgotten what it is. And some great work by some of our librarians, Jennifer Garland and Sean Swanick. I want to congratulate again on the great work that they've done with these exhibits. We also had the annual general meeting of the Friends, and our chancellor, Arnold Steinberg, was there, and I got comments back from him in some messages, some correspondence of email going back and forth, and when I thanked him for coming, and he said that of all the Friends groups that he often goes to associate with McGill, there is no group that's more enthusiastic and engaged than the Library Friends. And it is true that we have some very special people in the community who are great supporters as well. I know that there'll be a lot going on toward the rest of the year, but I just want to say thank you again for all of your hard work. And with that, I'm going to turn it over to Eamon, who's going to talk a little bit about SonTrade.
Okay, so I know what you're all probably asking yourself, why is this man wearing an apron? That's because downstairs right now there is an amazing bake sale going on, and all the proceeds go to SonTrade. So first of all, I'd like to thank all of you who've baked. You guys are amazing. It's scheduled to go from 1 to 4, but I would say probably in the next half hour, 45 minutes, it will all be gone. So I'm not telling you to leave the meeting early, but if you haven't gotten things already, you might be out of luck. But I just want to quickly say a few words about the campaign this year. The relationship between SonTrade and McGill. SonTrade obviously is, as many of you know, it's an umbrella organization that collects money from the public and distributes it through a wide variety of organizations on the ground that help people in our own neighborhoods and people even here who work or study at McGill. And they have a variety of employer programs, McGill being one of the more important ones. We're actually one of the top 50 campaigns in Quebec. So last year, we gave just over $416,000 from 625 donors. And together, these top campaigns make up about, top 100 make up about two-thirds of Centraide's budget. So we're a major donor organization, and they rely heavily on us and organizations like us to continue doing the work that they do. So our goal this year, the Centraide goal, the central goal is for $60 million. And at McGill, we're shooting for $450,000. So we'd like to, first of all, achieve our goal. Right now, we're about 60% successful at that goal. And I should say that the campaign is winding down. There's about one more week left. So we're really trying to push it through the last week of the campaign. But importantly, also this year, regardless of the number of the amount of money that we receive, we'd like to increase participation. Trying to get up to 825 donors from last year at 625. And if you're asking why you should give, for me the answer is simple. It's just a matter of taking care of each other. Some people, for whatever reason, they can't rely on their families or public assistance to meet the challenges that they have in their life. So sometimes we are all we have. So it's a way of helping those that need it. Anais is also a member of the Centraide Committee, and we've gone around to different libraries throughout the last month, and we've learned that several of you volunteer at many of the organizations that Centraide represents and supports. Some of you have even benefited from an organization that's supported by Centraide. So when you give to Centraide, you're giving to people who are in need in your neighborhood, people that you know. I'm sure I can guarantee you that money's going to go to a McGill student or a McGill colleague, a fellow union member, maybe even somebody in this room right now. So it's important to give. So please give back to your community. There's 370 organizations that Centraide supports. 500,000 people benefit from these organizations. That's one in eight people in the Montreal area. The average gift at McGill is $260 per year, and there are some leadership gifts where people who give $1,000 a year go into the leadership category. But I just want to tell you that anything counts. It's not the amount of money you give; it's the act of giving. Even $2 per paycheck—that's at the end of the year—that's a $50 donation. So something that you might not even see, something that's going to make a big difference in somebody else's life. A $5 donation per pay is $120 at the end of the year. So a little bit can go a long way, especially if we do it as a group. And there are several ways to give. If you'd like to give right now, downstairs at the bake sale table, we have donation forms. One of the easier ways to give, as I mentioned, was through payroll deductions. You received an email, the last one on November 12th, from Peter Todd and Michael DeGrappa. You can follow the link in there for a payroll deduction, or you can simply go to the Centraide of Greater Montreal website and make an online donation. So I'll just leave you with the slogan for this year's campaign, Donating is Uplifting. I'd like to thank you all for listening. Also thanking the several of you who have already given this year. Your support is appreciated. For those who haven't donated yet, please consider doing so. There are several people in our community who will depend on the support of Centraide. So. Yes? Yes. Yes. If you go to the website, yes, there is a spot in the form that you'll fill out asking if you'd like to have your donation be considered part of an employer's program, and you can specify that you're a McGill employee. Yes. Yes, Lydia.
Hey, Mon, if I can just add one more plug.
Go.
Again, as you mentioned, we are very close to the end of our campaign. We still have a long way to go. I want to remind everyone that there is that draw that is happening every week for an iPhone. We just picked the second winner this morning, another academic from the McDonald campus. Last week was an academic from this campus, which was nice. It'd be nice also if other categories would, but that's what happens with this random draw. But more importantly, really, that is just to raise the awareness and bring it up, as Iman was saying, It's not the amount that you give, but it's giving. Because again, if everyone in this room would give $2, if everyone in the universe would give $2, we would surpass our goal by tenfold. So I thank you all for giving that consideration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Come to our bake sale. All of you in TV land.
Yes. Get... Thank you. Our ex-bake sale, I guess. So next, I think Lori is up. Let's see if we can get her up here. Excuse me while I got set up. I think this is okay. Hi, everyone. I'm Lori. So I was asked to present to you a little bit about the LibQol Light survey that we did last year. And so this is going to be a very brief, quick overview of some highlights of the results. And perhaps I will be giving more detail later. So for those of you who may not be familiar with LibQol, this is a survey that many universities conduct. They offer it to their users, so that would be students and faculty who are members of the McGill community and presumably at some point use the library or make use of the library. LibQol has been conducted at McGill. It's been available for over 10 years, since about 2000, and McGill has conducted it almost every single year, once a year. So it's a massive survey that goes out, and it goes out usually in the winter semester, and ours went out last 2012. If I'm correct, I think around the end of February, it runs for a few weeks. And in it, we ask many different questions to our users that fall within three dimensions. So we have three areas of interest in the survey. We want to know about service, affective service, about something called information control, which is access to information, published material and online material, and the facilities, the library as place. And LibQol Lite, this is a version of LibQol that is the same survey, but instead of asking every single respondent to the survey to answer every single question, it asks them to answer some of the questions so that it can still gather information about the three dimensions, but makes the survey go a lot faster, which tries to increase the response rate, so people are more likely to actually finish the survey. So that's why it's called LibQol Lite. So here, I know this room is not great for projecting, so I just want you to get the overall sense of what's on these. You don't actually have to see every little thing. That's weird. So there's a few of the items. I'm just going to show you the responses from a few of them to highlight how we're doing. So this is access to e-resources. And the specific question asks users, how are we doing for making electronic resources available from my home or office? So if they feel that they have access from their home or office. And what I want you to pay attention to is the red dot here. This is a longitudinal display of the data. So like I said, we've been doing this survey for a while. So this goes back 10 years. And you can see the difference anyway from the red dot over on that side to this side that we're doing, we're improving. But what you can also see is that trend, that dashed line, that's the line that shows McGill's progress over time. So you can see on the scale that we are improving. We are at a positive slope there. And the solid line that you see going across, that dark black solid line, is the trend across all Association of Research Libraries. So a lot of ARL libraries do the LibQol survey every year. And so we can not only compare our results to ourselves from previous years, but we can see how we're doing on average compared to all other libraries, all other research libraries. So for graduate students, this is for graduate students only, there is an improvement. And for undergraduates as well, you can see the red dots are going up. So the trend is that we're going up. So we're improving a little by little. The other things that's important to keep in mind for these slides, there's a lot of colors on it, is that these numbers are not absolute in that when we ask users their ratings on how we're doing, we ask them to tell us what is the minimum that they would think is acceptable, what is the desired level they think is acceptable, and then where we fall within that range, usually, hopefully within that range. So in other words, instead of asking people on a scale of 1 to 10, how are we doing, we ask them, how important is this to you? And then how are we doing? So someone might say, for example, a faculty member might say, if we ask them, how important is it to have electronic access to journals and books from your office? And they might say, it's really important. Like, it's, you know, 8 out of 10 important or 9 out of 10 important. And I think you're at an 8. Whereas an undergraduate student might say, it's 6 out of 10 important, and I think you're doing a 7. So, in other words, their expectations might be different, and we may or may not be surpassing those expectations or not. So that's why it's useful to look at the dots in terms of what the expectations are. And those are drawn on this with different lines, a little dotted line, and there's a green line, and there's a bar in between to kind of show you that range. And so that if we fall within that range, that means we're doing pretty good. We're within their expectations. If the red dot is below where that line starts, that means we're not at the minimum expectations. I'll show you some more examples. And this is the question about the website. This is a tricky one. The library website, which enables me to locate information on my own. Well, something weird happened with these slides because the red dots are missing. But you can see the trend line, the dashed line, shows you that the trend here is pretty stable. And this is for undergraduate students, and we're within that area. This is called the zone of tolerance. So we're within that. So we're meeting the expectations for undergraduates. We're on the low side, but we're above that line. For graduate students, we're kind of on the line. We're basically right at the bottom. So we're barely meeting those expectations when it comes to graduate students. And for faculty, we're also a little bit low. And this is the average for ARL, so we're lower than the average for ARL. Now, keep in mind, this question is about the website, but we don't necessarily know exactly. When we say website, our users might be interpreting everything they get on the web from the library. So they could be including in that the catalog, the databases, not necessarily the website front page, per se, or the library pages or subject guides. It could mean the entire sort of web to them. So it's important when you're interpreting this to keep in mind of how they interpret the question, because that might be what they're thinking about. So you can see that faculty are a little bit different than the rest here. E-journal access. So undergraduates, for accessing print and electronic journal collections that they require, can see that there's a slight upward trend. So we're getting a little bit better over time. Oops. Sorry, I jumped ahead. That was undergraduates. Okay, and then faculty, we're actually improving quite a bit. You can see that line there, the dashed line, is on a nice slope that's going up. So although we haven't really reached that sort of minimum level, we are improving quite a bit in terms of accessing e-journals for faculty. You'll notice here that their desired level, the green line, is almost at 9, which is the highest. So this is very, very important to faculty. And lastly, space. So space is important to undergraduate students. They rate it up here as an 8, as their desired level. And you can see that we're just at the minimum, but that it is improving as well. We're right on the same line as the ARL average here. So our dashed line coincides with the ARL average, which is a solid line. We're pretty much exactly the same as the ARL average. And for graduate students, it's pretty much the same thing. I don't have the data for faculty because I didn't include it. It's much lower ranked in terms of importance. Faculty are not as, they don't have as much strong feelings about this space. And I wanted to show you this graph. This one's a little bit different. It's not over time. It just breaks down all of the branches that we had in 2011 and 2012. So GIC's in here. And the responses are just, they're listed by the branches with the most answers. So that first bar there represents the Humanities and Social Sciences Library. The next one is Schulich. The next one's Life Sciences. But what you can see here is this is for a question about our service. So for employees who deal with users in a caring fashion, this includes all the staff, you can see that our ratings are very good. So in every case, our dot is within this zone of tolerance, if not at the top. So we are rated very highly in terms of people's expectations of what they want and whether we're meeting those expectations or not. So I thought this was a nice graph to show. I don't break these down by user groups because it's generally all the same, very positive responses overall. So that's my snapshot of LabQual results. If anyone has any questions or comments about this or about LabQual, I'd be happy to answer them. Yes, Mark.
On this particular graph, the ones to the right of GIC, are the numbers too small to be statistically significant?
Yes, the numbers are very small. I don't know whether or not we could say they'd be statistically significant because it's not the numbers themselves. It would be the numbers in terms of the numbers actually represented of those libraries. And without knowing people who typically use Osler library, I couldn't say if that number is adequate or not because this is a random sample. But without knowing which of the people actually answered the survey. So yeah, it's possible those numbers are a little too small. It's unfortunate that this is how LabQual Lite works. Not every question is presented to every user, which is why I don't break this down further by faculty, undergrad, and grad, because then the numbers would get really tiny. So that's why those numbers look a little bit wonky after the GIC, but before that, there are plenty. The N size is pretty big. Good question, though. You have a question.
Yeah. I failed statistics. What use is qualitative data? Are you using qualitative data?
Yeah. So.
Then I have a second question.
Okay. Okay. We want to ask it. Ask it. Go ahead.
How does this information then translate itself to the external community? In other words, everybody always talks about the McLean's rhythm. Mm-hmm. McGill rates very high internationally. Mm-hmm. In so how does this use in all of that?
Great. So the first question was about qualitative, and LabQual, as the name suggests, is looking at quality of service, and it is based on qualitative items, but it is a quantitative survey. But it's looking at service quality from the user's perspective. And in the survey, if you've ever filled it out, which you may have, because all staff are invited to, there is a huge section, or is a section where people can add comments, and people always do. There are 750 comments from last year, which I'm still sorting through. Those comments usually are associated with the items in the questionnaire, so people will elaborate. They may have answered something, and then they will say, you know, the service in this branch is fantastic, or this person is really great, or you know, it's too hot in this branch, in this side, next to this table, those kinds of comments. So I can group those and then see other themes that come out. But qualitative data is really important for interpreting and understanding what we're actually seeing. For instance, what do people mean when they say the website is not meeting their expectations? What does that mean? What are their expectations? And we can gather that data a different way as well.
I also come from a background where, maybe I wasn't clear and I apologize.
That's okay.
I talk about qualitative data. I mean, actually talking
Yep.
In other words, in the context of a focus group, yep. Users of the service.
Okay.
Is that something that's part of what you're going to do? Or?
That's a good question. Yeah, I hope so. I think that will be, to follow up on this when we identify areas that we want to target and then gather that data in a qualitative way. That's my background, is qualitative.
Okay.
Although I didn't fail statistics, so I can also interpret this. And to answer your second question, Stephen, I think that it's really interesting when we do see the results of surveys or those rankings in magazines and newspapers to keep in mind that that's data that is technically quantitative, and that's not always data from users. Some magazines do have a reputation factor. That's usually for the university, not for the library. I don't know how they sample their population in terms of reputation. But otherwise, the data that they use to rank libraries and most of the stuff for the university as a whole has to do with quantitative measures like how many books we have in our collection or how many books we have per student, how much we spend on our collections, what percentage we spend on our collections versus our entire budget, those kinds of things. So they don't ask if our users are happy. They just look at how big our library is, for instance. So in a sense, they're kind of simplified, but it allows them to make comparisons across lots of libraries. So there's lots of problems with those measures, but it is what it is. So it's important to understand what they actually mean and what they don't mean. They don't necessarily ask people if they're happy with their library. So that's something that we have to do internally. Yeah, Danielle?
Tell us what the gray histograms are.
This?
Yeah.
This is... Sure. This is a funny-looking chart. It's called a temperature chart. but I don't know if that really is helpful. So basically what you have, if you look on another one, well, this is probably better to look at. This box that's created, this is just the bottom and the top measure in terms of the minimum. So the bottom is the minimum that our users say they would like in terms of employees who deal, this is the question on the survey. Employees who deal with users in a caring fashion, on a scale of 1 to 9, what is the minimum acceptable level? And on average, they said, in law, they said 6.5, and their desired level is 8.2. To them, that's super, that would be, desired would be 8.2, and the average law said 8.1. So the only thing you could do would be better would be if you were outside that, if you were surpassing their dream of what would be great service. So that's what this is. This creates the zone of where they would like you to fall. And that's why it's important to, in some questions, the user groups, there could be vast differences. So like I said before, undergraduates, they would want a library space that's like a 9. They want a beautiful library space that's amazing. But faculty are fine with a 5. They might not care as much because they don't spend as much time physically studying in the library. So they both might rank you a 6, but for the faculty, that's exceeding their expectations, whereas for an undergrad, that's not even, it's barely acceptable, for example. So it has to do with what their preference is. Does that make sense, what that box is?
It's absolutely
sense. Okay, great. I still don't know why it's called a temperature chart, but maybe because it looks, a thermometer chart, maybe because it looks like mercury in a thermometer. Any more questions? You guys can always contact me later if you're curious to learn more. Stephen, you also mentioned about sharing these results. LiveCall, we typically post that on our website. That will be coming. We have from the previous years, our LiveCall results are always made public, and those reports are shared as other universities, they share that data as well. So our community can see, and they can see that we are making changes based on the feedback, and we usually post what we're doing in response to certain items. So I'll pass it over to Isabel. I'll pass it over to Colleen. Yeah.
I'm just going to, all of it. That's okay, you'll be right there. I just want to thank Lori for, you know, it's kind of scary, I guess, to be presenting data that in front of someone who created it. So she did a great job. There are a couple of trends here that I hope that the graphs that she showed really represent some of the things that I've been saying. One is that the biggest differences among user groups, among our clientele and our general constituency, is not among disciplines, it's among user groups. And the slides that she showed up here are very representative of that. It's not that users from the arts or science feel so greatly differently. What matters is, are you an undergraduate or a graduate student or a faculty member? And those are where the big differences are. You can also see here, and I asked her to do this really at the 11th hour, and I very much appreciate her putting this together this way, particularly the trend lines. Trend lines are hugely important because the best comparator, one of the good things about LiveCall is you can compare against your peers. And being able to represent us against our ARL colleagues is really important. But what's the most important comparison that you can do across for management purposes is to compare yourself over time. So the fact that McGill has this rich data set, and you can see the trend lines going up and down, is hugely important. And it's actually the representation of those trend lines that's really helpful from a management point of view. So you can see that we have made enormous strides in content provision. And if you look at desired levels of service, where those bar graphs, that's called the zone of tolerance, those bar graphs on those charts, they go up and down. And when they're at the highest level, those are the issues that are most salient or most important to users. And you can see that the most important thing to users is always content, always. The second most important thing tends to be service. So you could see that content, a lot of them, it was almost always up in the 9s, between 9 and then way, way, way up there. And in service, it was chunked down a little bit. But one of the things that I just have to say, and again, this is a terrific reflection upon this organization and the people who provide service, is, you know, what matters is when the rubber hits the road, it's how our users feel about us, and we were within the zone of tolerance in all of that. We were well within the zone of tolerance in all of our branch libraries, and this, we did have enough data to break them down basically by most branches. And it was really important, because this was done right after the strike, to realize that opinions of service did not go down and were not affected by some of the decisions that we took with the strike and what happened during that time. So the fact that we reduced hours on the reference desk, for instance, those decisions were solid decisions. And those sorts of decisions are one that we base on this sort of data. It's also important to realize that with that website question, there is not a website or access for any of our digital products or whatever that is not a permanent work in progress. You will never arrive and have a website be what people want it to be. All you can do is get better. And some of my colleagues have done really, really fascinating studies within LibQual data to identify those libraries which have really comparatively higher marks in access to the websites and access to the web compared to others. And then they've gone to look at how those websites are put together, and there are some common features. It's fascinating, absolutely fascinating to see that you can search out the common features, and across user groups, across libraries, we are much more similar than we are different, because they're similar from one to the next, and you can identify the features that result in higher ranking. So this stuff can be a very rich data set, and I'm going to be asking Lori to report back periodically, not very often, but periodically as we get more of this data. So thank you, Isabel.
So good afternoon, everyone. So we'll start with the staffing and the current searches. So as you know, the posting for the position of Ed Librarian for the ASO Library has closed on Monday. We received a few applications, and the search committee will review them shortly. At the same time, we completed the search for the specialized catalog editor in collection services, and Margaret Blanford was the successful candidate. Congratulations, Margaret. We will start the interview for the documentation technician in ILL next week. We have interviews scheduled for Friday, so before Christmas, we'll have identified our successful candidate also for that search. We are confident. And also, some of you might have noticed that we have posted the ed position for the Schulich Library. So we'll be accepting application until January 2nd. Now, for the upcoming search, we will be actually posting the request that have been sent to Central HR for the 2M position in collection services, the manager for collection development, the person reporting to Louis Hull, for some of you who want to identify the position within collection services, and also the supervisor for reserve and acquisition. This is the M position reporting to Louise Robertson under processing, receiving, and something. I only had like 30 characters for a title, so I had to be creative. We will be posting shortly also a position for a librarian, a digitization and preservation librarian, and also confident on everything we can accomplish in the next few weeks. We'll post the senior director of client services and take another kick at the can for the director of digital initiatives. and see if at this time of the year we can attract a bigger pool of candidates. So those are for the upcoming search. Slowly but surely, I'm working down that list. As for the kudos, in the month of November, our colleague Juanita was named by the National Board of Peruvian College of Librarians honorary member of the college. This is a fantastic achievement. Juanita, I think I saw you coming in. Congratulations. And also this past Tuesday, during the evening, the Friends of the Library, during their annual meeting, nominated Bruna, our own Bruna Ciccolini, Friends of the Year, and she received the award in front of colleagues, friends, and family member. Congratulations to you. So as for announcement and reminders, and I'll start with the work since the big guy is paying us and finish with the fun stuff. On December 6th, and this is an announcement, no formal invitation and information has been sent because the date is still tentative, almost official, but we want to have an annual performance recognition report session, training session, information session for a librarian with supervision responsibility. So more details will come out about this shortly. And as a reminder, the next Dean's office hour will be December 4th from 11 to noon. And if you want to speak to the Dean, but in a more informal setting, don't be afraid to come to Collection Services, as they will be hosted the next Coffee with Colleen, or Colleen's Coffee, I'm sorry. And at the same time, it will give you the opportunity to meet your colleague from Collection Services. And this will be December 13. And if you're still in the mood for more coffee and sweets and maybe some eggnog, December 17 will be the Dean's Holiday Open House from 2:30 to 4:30. So I hope to see you all there. And we'll make sure to have some sort of vegan version of eggnog. I don't know if it's feasible. I'll have to work with you on that. And also in the month of November, before I finish, we welcome two new colleagues among us. So Ina Dysart joined Oisler in the month of November. And we have also Jillian Tom, who has joined Rare Books in her capacity as a postdoctoral scholar. So welcome to the two of you. And that's it for the HR update.
Hey, can I ask something?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was wondering, on the first slide that you had out there, you said there's two positions coming up. One's a manager and one's a supervisor.
Yeah.
Are they both? What's the difference?
One is a level 2 position in the M family, and the other one, the supervisor, is a level 1 in the M group.
Okay.
So that's the difference.
Yeah. In terms of hiring and firing, would it be
both of them will supervise staff.
Okay. Good afternoon, everyone. Now it's time to talk a little bit of renovation facilities update. So time for some pictures and give you an update. First, I want to start with the Hustle Group Study Lab, which, as you know, it's now complete. That new area has two group study rooms, which are the 6-seater group study rooms, 42 table seats, 60 comfy seats. And right now, the space planning group is doing the evaluation, and at some point, we're going to get the results to see what furniture the students like, what's more comfortable, and what colors, what fabrics we should be using on future renovations. Here are some pictures of the area. As you can see, there's all different types of furniture. comfy seating, table seating. There's lots of whiteboards in the columns, in the walls, mobile ones. So we're trying to give users different different experience. You can see the type of fabrics. These ones are wood ones. So material-wise as well, we're looking at different options, try to see what's best. If I jump now to the McLennan Redpath Terrace upgrade, basically right now we're finishing up what is phase two. It's supposed to be open by December the 15th. That's why there's the bet for Centrade, which we're going to know who wins tomorrow. And I just want to make everyone aware that this is phase two. For next year, we're going to have phase three, which is pretty much from the entrance from Redpath all the way to Morris Hall. So that's going to be happening summer next year. Once that phase is done, then that means we'll have the full terrace done, which is the tunnel and the whole McLennan Terrace. Pictures of it? It's a nice, just to animate it a little bit. That's a different angle. Without snow, so we'll see who wins. Then I'm gonna jump to McLennan, the third floor renovation. Just to update you that project, it's fully complete. We now have 350 new seats around the perimeter. There's three sections. I call it McTavish, Sherbrooke, and Campuside. The furniture as well, you'll see that the color selection and the type of furniture is slightly different. We have four group study rooms, which those are two in the core of the building, two on the north section of the building, and those are bookable by students. And also the project for the electronic compact shelving has been finished. So all that section, if any of you wants to go and see it or hasn't taken a look at it, please feel free. I'll be more than happy to get your comments, opinions about that project. There's some pictures of it. This is one of the open space on the perimeter facing the north side of campus. And this is one of the group study rooms that we're talking about. Those are 10-seaters or 8-seater, depending on the location, but that's pretty much what we have now up there. Coming soon, which this is the fun part, because there are several projects that we're still planning, and we're in different stages of the planning and design process. But Rare Books, for example, Rare Books and Special Collections, we're going to redesign the entrance. We're going to build a wall over there. We're going to add mechanical compact shelving into the what is currently the open area. So all that floor is going to become Rare Books and Special Collections. Education library, we've been working together with Sarah, Maya, and the team to have a new seating, new study areas. We're changing spaces and moving the shelving as well to make sure we have a comfortable and more group study space for their library. In Hustle, on the main floor, I'm talking about McLennan building here, we're going to look to expand the quiet seating areas. That project, we're going to be working pretty soon on it. That's why there's no expected date, but that one is coming. And as I mentioned on the previous Dean's Corner and previous meetings, there's going to be CyberMeth, which is the life sciences library on the second floor. That project is starting on January 2013, and we expect to be fully finished by September on same year. Last but not least, I want to mention that we're in the process of getting an email for all the renovations. The email alias is going to be reno.library@mcgill.ca. So for any of the facilities updates that we're doing, if any of you have comments, please send it through. We'll be able to analyze it and take your comments as well in consideration. That will be for me. I don't know if there's any questions. Sure.
These are all projects, I guess, in my mind, to make the place look pretty, mm-hmm. and which is very important. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to be little, quite the opposite. But from a practical point of view, and perhaps I'm speaking about things I know nothing about, but the Redpath basement mm-hmm. seems to be an ongoing problematic area. Mm-hmm.
Is there a plan to dig up the foundation, to do something? It just seems like it's a real problem.
The question is in regards, for those who are online, the question is in regards to the RedPath basement. Basically, what we have on the basement is there's a problem with the foundation of the building. You know, the facilities is analyzing the cost of that, if it's convenient to do that section as well. I'm talking about all the facade on the McTavish side. So that project at this point, you know, it's installed over there. On our end, what we're doing, and that's why, for example, we're adding the compact shelving on the fourth floor and so on, is to make sure that all the valuable collections and so on, are moved into the upper floors of the building. And then Colleen and the other facilities team will analyze, and we have to strategize to see what's the best use of the RedPath basement for the future, and then we'll take it from there, decide what goes there, if we're out, if we bring some other services to that area. Mm-hmm. Other questions? Yes.
Is there any plan at this point to like develop the bathrooms in the room for RedPath?
Okay. The question is in regards to public bathrooms in RedPath and so on. We're currently working on a project to figure out how to renovate that space. At that point, yes, we all know that public washrooms, they're a big concern. We just need to work out in conjunction with architects and engineers to make sure what we can do, which areas we can expand, and then we do have that into consideration for the bigger project on that area. Yes. Go ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The question is in regards. Sorry. Go ahead.
Are there any plans to, I don't know, just clean it up because it's very messy?
Mm-hmm. Question is in regards to the RedPath basement storage area. What everybody should be aware of is, on the last flood that we had, the RedPath basement got flooded. There was a team that's from Premier Acción who did all the cleanup, all the sanitizing of the space and everything. We're fully aware that area, because of the same facade problem, it's prone to floods and so on. That's why we took further action and start finding out other areas where we can move the collection and so on. So yes, it will be great that if we can just move everything right away. But as you know, we have limited space and so on. But we're doing our best and trying to see which areas we can move. We can add the compact shelving, or we can move collections to, so that we pretty much get out of that section until it's fully renovated. Okay. I will look into that and I can report back, just so that I get the right picture. Any other questions? No?
Actually,
yes.
I wanted to know why they laid the stone right up on the terrace and then took it all up and did it again.
Okay. The problem in the terrace. Okay. Question is in regards to the terrace, why they did it, they took it back and put it again. The problem in the terrace, as far as I understood from the engineers and so on, is they have to increase the concrete slab by 6 inches. So that means for phase 3, for example, all the doors and so on, they'll have to raise everything. So when they start to lay down the first batch of paves and so on, the height, they were not arriving to the right height. So that's why they had to take out everything and redo it again. So yes, because again, for the next phase, even the RedPath entrance and so on, it has to be modified. There's a 6 inches difference between both buildings. That was the reason. Is there any questions? No? I apologize. Oh, go ahead.
Bathroom in McLennan building. Any plans to fix that?
Bathroom in McLennan buildings. That's a good question. I do get the reports of the work orders and so on. I know facilities team is looking into them constantly. They're trying to fix as much as they can. Again, this goes back to the public washrooms. I think we have, not only in this branch, but in several branches, we will need to start upgrading all of them. Well, not all of them, but I mean, you know, based on the volume that they have, make sure we have the right number of washrooms based on the capacity. So that is a project. We have a project for that. We have a project as well for the water fountains that facilities directly, they're looking after that. As you saw, the tests that we have here on the corridor in Redpath, those are two of the fountains. One is cool, one is not. But then their plan is to, you know, bring that across the campus. But those are the two projects they're working on. Yes, Colleen.
Lighting.
Okay. Oops. Me again. We're going to have, we start talks about a lighting renovation. Basically, what McGill is doing right now, I'm sure you know that we started with the HVAC last year. They started to upgrade the HVAC to make it all digital. At some point, we were still with the analog and so on. Now, all the HVAC for Redpath and McLennan is fully digital, which means facilities can take a picture anytime and they can check the temperature in all the rooms that we have. The phase two of that is that now the lights and so on, they're going to be upgraded. We currently have a lot of T12s, light fixtures. If any of you knows, T12 means the size and the type of the bulb. Now we're going to what it's called T8, which means facilities will be upgrading the ballast. They have to change the ballast for an electronic one, and then the light bulb itself is going to be more energy efficient. Added to that, they're going to be adding motion sensors into the spaces so that if the space is unoccupied, lights are going to go down. If the space is occupied, it will go up. Right now, we're going to be working in a project for that with facilities. We're going to do first a demo in one of the floors. We're going to assess. The plan is not to have the lights off at any time. If there's any users, for sure, our first concern is to have the areas properly lighted and secure for our students. So we're going to be looking into that, but making sure that when the spaces are not used, we still put our share for energy efficiency and save some energy over there. So that's going to come in the next months or so. I'll be updating everyone on the following meetings about that. Yes?
Regarding the motion sensors that will be installed in all the rooms and spaces, will they be the silent type, or will they be the type near the entrance to collection services that make annoying clicking noises every time you walk past them?
Okay. Question is in regards to those motion sensors, if they're going to make noise, yes, no. I think at this point, I'm too early to talk about that. I do know that facilities is looking into different technologies, because it can be infrared, it can be some other technologies. Right now, we started to talk about the plan, which area to do the demo, what are our library concerns in regards of safety and so on. And then they have to go back and they have to check what sensor, what kind of technology matches that. And again, this is going to be a project in conjunction with them. Once the demo is underway, every one of you will be aware of.
Could the message be passed along that the ones that make clicking noises are extremely annoying?
I'm even assuming that that's really old technology. So and the newer ones, it's quite an opposite. For those of you that have been in Europe, for example, a lot of European libraries, they already have this type of system. So we're just trying to move on and make sure we put as well our share in energy efficiency. Any other questions? I apologize a little bit for my voice. I have a little cold, but I hope you like it. Wellness thing. Sorry. Wellness thing, because this one, it's a recent one. Starting this week, we're going to be open 24/7 in Hustle. There was students actually were the ones who brought this to our attention, and we did the necessary arrangements with security, with Lanel, with cleaner staff, to make sure that the main RedPath floor and CyberTech, instead of being open 24/5, they're now open 24/7. That will be it.
Thank you. If you ever wonder how many people are tuning into this from a distance, there are about 60 people who are with us who aren't in the room right now. So hello to everybody. Okay. Julie.
But this is just a quick announcement that I'm giving. So, let me see if I can manage the technology. Just as I do this, talking about the lighting, McGill, a lot of people don't realize, we have an energy meter online. You can look at buildings on campus and see what their energy consumption is. And it might be neat to monitor this over the next little while as we go through this transition. I'm Julie Jones. I'm the co-chair of the Sustainability Working Group. And I am just going to talk about Vision 2020, what it is, and why you should care. Maybe. Okay. Those of you, most of you probably came in the RedPath entrance, and you probably noticed the big board, Vision 2020. This went up yesterday, I believe. And feedback board, please. There it is, yeah. So what is this? Vision 2020 is a group that is based at the Office of Sustainability here at McGill. And they are spearheading this campus-wide consultation process over the next few years to basically put the very high-level environmental and sustainability policies that McGill has adopted in the last decade into practice, because we have very, very high-level policies, 2001's environmental policy, and then 2010's sustainability policy. Now, not only do people often not know that we have these, they certainly don't know what they mean to them in their daily life here at McGill working. So that's what Vision 2020 is all about. Really bottom-up consultation that will take place over the next few years. It started at the beginning of this year. And where things are now is that there is a draft report of vision and goals for sustainability. What do we want to look like by 2020 with regard to this stuff? And the next step will be sustainability strategy by April 2013 with very concrete actions, objectives, and means of measuring success. But before that, feedback from everyone. On campus. Everyone who works at this library is invited to provide feedback by December 10th. And one way you can do it is here, very simple. The blue paper is comments for what's in the report or not in the report, if you think something is missing. Yellow is suggestions for actions, possible ways that we can achieve these goals. You may want to acquaint yourself with the report. If you don't want to read the, it's about 18 pages. I can give you, you can call me and I'll give you some sound bites. And the other way you can provide feedback will be online. And we'll circulate an email with a link to the report and a link to a means of providing online feedback. Okay? Why should we care about this at the library? All of us in the work that we do here, we facilitate access to knowledge, and that really drives sustainability. Integrating sustainability into research at McGill is a major goal of Vision 2020 and also ASAP 2012, which is the Achieving Strategic Academic Priorities major report that will be guiding us over the next few years, and what we do will make that possible. Access to knowledge will fuel sustainability research. And the other thing is social space. We, our social space in the libraries is kind of unique because we're kind of the only people on campus who plan and offer social space that anybody can be in. You don't have to buy anything to be here. And that's really tied to social sustainability and kind of breaking down the silos at McGill and bringing people together to collaborate, and collaboration's huge with sustainability. So that's another thing that is really important. Also, there's a lot of stuff in the report about the sustainability of us as humans, as workers at McGill, and it's tied to the environment that we do our work in. So I think it's a good read, and I invite you to provide feedback. And I think I'll leave it at that. Any questions? All right, expect an email. Should I just leave it up, or is there more?
Okay. Thank you, Julie. Thank you. There was a lot today, for sure. Okay, where are we?
I'll be there.
Okay. I love the snowflakes. Poor Diane. Okay. Okay. Just one final thing. I had a very important meeting up at Life Sciences yesterday, and it was a difficult meeting, but it was one that I really enjoyed because I got to sit across the table with a lot of my colleagues from Life Sciences and actually talk about a lot of the great issues of our times. But as I was sliding down the street, I noticed that there were 3 fire trucks coming up in front of my law library. And there were lots of flashing things and people pouring out of the building. And I just want to say that just like all of our great colleagues, everybody there knew exactly what to do, and I want to thank them on the behalf of the community for knowing what to do and getting everybody out and no one hurt a couple of times as we negotiated the fact that the smoke in the elevator really wasn't because of a fire and something that wasn't going to harm anyone. But every time the fire trucks come out, it costs all of us lots of money. And it, just a reminder that I know that this was just one of those things I happened to be walking by and just seeing all the good work that people do on a daily basis here in our libraries, doing the right thing at the right time. This is only one example of that. I note that one that I just happened to be walking by, but again, I just want to thank people for just doing these things, doing the right thing at the right time, and I'm very appreciative of that. So, that one's cute. Donating is uplifting. So that's it. I will entertain any questions about anything or pass it off to any of our speakers if they know more than I, or any questions from a distance. Okay, greetings from Marika. Oh, good. Good. Any questions? Any questions from a distance? No? Okay, thank you all very much.